Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Coming your way right now. And once again, Jack Curry of the Yes Network, thanks so much on this Wednesday evening for giving us a couple of minutes of your time. I think both of us wishing we had some baseball tonight, but the Yankees letting everyone know as soon as they could see what was happening later this evening with a good 90 to 95% with thunderstorms happening. So they did the right decision, and certainly making the right decision before they were going to do it at 7 o'clock with everybody in the ballpark. So as early as they could do it, they postponed the game in a doubleheader tomorrow. So they made the right call, even though when the call was made, the weather looked pretty good from where I was sitting.
Same where I was, Steve. I was in our studio, and we were kind of jolted by the news. But then when I looked at the forecast, which honestly I hadn't even really peeked at because of the sun that I saw, I did think that they had made the right call. And as you just said, I was driving through the New York area not too long ago, and it was coming down pretty strong. And now you get a doubleheader tomorrow. I like to call these kind of the American Legion variety, because they'll be seven inning games. Yankees go with Herman and Montgomery, and they try to give themselves some good news, Steve, because the news that came out of Aaron Boone's press conference today wasn't that good for the Yankees.
And again, we understand he cannot throw for a month, and then it's going to take maybe a little while after that for him to get back into game shape, yes?
Right, Steve. When we had Corey Kluber on our post game last night at Yes, and the way he described what his injury was and how he didn't think it was the same injury that limited him to one inning last year, and how it was something that he felt in the bullpen, and he described it as a heavy arm, I thought there were some encouraging tidbits there. Well, we're all just trying to read the tea leaves until he gets an MRI. But then when Boone gave the information he did today about the subscapular strain, as you just pointed out, that's a month without throwing. And then the school of thought in baseball is, well, if you've missed a month, it's going to take you a month to build your way back up. Oh, so we're now looking at maybe August for Kluber. So really, a pitcher who one start removed from a no-hitter, who had really looked strong for the Yankees in his last five or six starts, will now be somebody that they'll wait to get back into that rotation.
With the no-hitter, he only threw 101 pitches and seemed to go through those nine innings and 101 pitches with ease and comfort, and everything was working and it was seamless and he was just spectacular. And then with full rest, he was going last night. Did you notice anything other than he struck out the first two guys, then he walked two in a row before retiring the side in the top of the first inning? Did you notice anything from him? He's got the poker face, doesn't show much emotion, very stoic out there on the mound. Did you notice anything that said where you said to yourself, he's not right?
I'd be lying if I said I noticed an injury, Steve. I will say this, watching the game with Bob Lorenz and John Flaherty, and obviously Flaherty's a former major league catcher for 14 years.
Sure.
We thought early on that his breaking pitch, which had been so dynamic and then moved like a boomerang against the Rangers, didn't have the same movement that it had had. But that didn't lead me to think injury. That just led me to believe sometimes you got A-plus stuff and sometimes you've got B stuff, and you have to figure it out. I think the natural question, and some people ask me this on social media, is, well, why didn't they skip him? He pitched a no-hitter, and that could have sapped a lot of his energy. Why didn't they skip him? Well, they gave him one extra day of rest. As you just said, he threw 101 pitches. Of course they were draining pitches. You're going for a no-hitter. But in his last four innings of that Rangers start, three of the four innings were eight-pitch innings. So I'm not going to sit back here and second-guess and say you should have given him, you should have skipped him the rotation and this would not have happened. Maybe, Steve, this is just the culmination of a guy who threw one inning last year and now is over the 50-inning plateau and his arm struck back a little and wasn't ready to go to that next level.
Okay, and now with the rotation, where do we go to fill his spot?
Interestingly enough, Steve, Aaron Boone revealed today that even without the Kluber injury, the Yankees were going to insert Davey Garcia into the rotation this weekend in the hopes of giving everybody a day off. Well, that is kind of eliminated now because he just is going to become Kluber essentially in the rotation. And we got a glimpse of him last year. He actually started a postseason game, don't forget. They only let him throw one inning, but he does have a postseason start on his ledger. Right. Pitching okay at AAA right now. He's had two good starts, a couple of rocky starts. He's got an ERA of about five. But, Steve, what impressed me the most when he came up last year is for a young kid not flustered at all, believes that he's a major leaguer, believes that he can succeed at this level. And as Boone said, now he's going to get a chance. I mean, Michael King is in the offing, too, as another possibility. Mm-hmm. But I think the pitcher who gets the first chance is Davey Garcia. And if he runs with it, he will stay in the rotation until Severino comes back from his Tommy John or until Kluber returns. But Davey Garcia has a shot to really impact the Yankees.
And have you, and we're talking, of course, to the very familiar Jack Curry that everyone knows what Jack looks like, and we're hearing him now for a couple of minutes talking Yankees, of course. And we remember Garcia, he did give up against the Rays in the postseason that home run to a Rosarena and threw only 27 or 28 pitches. And much to a lot of people's chagrin, Yankee fan chagrin, he wasn't around for the second inning. And you're right about the poise and the composure, because after that home run, he finished the inning. He did throw 27 or 28 pitches. That's not 8 or 9 or 10. But everyone expected him to come out for the second inning, and instead we saw Jay Happ. My guessing, and you're certainly closer with everything going on, I also was guessing Garcia and maybe Michael King possibly taking the place of Kluber. The Yankees, after that 5-10 or 6-11 start, just turn things around, Jack, with, you know, maybe with the weather getting a little bit better. It's always cool at the beginning of the season in April, and certainly cool. The Yankees were not. They were absolutely cold. And now they had won all these games in a row, and last night, you know, took a loss, 6-2. And you can't win them all, we understand. But they have played so much better, and the 37 and a third scoreless from the starters, absolutely remarkable.
All right, Steve, that turnaround that you talked about, and it was 5-10, and they went on a 23-9 run until they lost last night, so 23-10 since then. That was boosted by the pitchers. If you look at their offense even right now, let's put Stanton to the side since he's on the IL. Judge, Urshela, and most recently, because he's really been hot, Gleyber Torres, they've given you the offense you would have expected from them. You go up and down the rest of their roster, and those hitters have not produced. I mean, Frazier and Ford and Gardner, all under 200. I mean, DJ LeMahieu's hitting in the mid 250s or 260s. I think he's going to be better than that. He won a batting title. Mm-hmm. But their pitching is what guided them. It was an interesting note heading into last night's game. The Yankees had a six-game winning streak. The Blue Jays had a six-game losing streak, right. Yet the Blue Jays had scored more runs in their losing streak than the Yankees had scored during their winning streak. Why? Because of that scoreless streak from the pitchers that you had just mentioned. So the pitchers carried them for a long while. I think we all know who Cole is. I think Herman has proven that he is back, and they have to see how many innings they can get out of him. Montgomery looked terrific in his last start. Tyone is getting there. I think he, coming off his second Tommy John, I think there's still more that they need from him. But Kluber was supposed to be your number two, and now he's not there. So as the Yankees move forward in a really tough division, a division that is top heavy right now with themselves and the Red Sox and the Rays, as we speak, all sitting there with 20 losses, they're going to need all facets of their game to produce, and it has been the pitching that has guided them the most.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned about Torres, who's warming up, and you know, we saw the home run from Ford and so forth and so on. So a couple of guys who were struggling offensively, certainly during the winning streak and with everything looking good, Frazier also seeming to come around, but not Gary Sanchez. And so we're going to see Higgy behind the plate. I think a lot of Yankee fans are happy about that. Sanchez continues, although we understand his potential with what he can do with one swing, he can make a difference in a game, we understand. However, he's not been very consistent, and I'm not so sure his defense has gotten much better than what it's been, Jack.
Yeah, Gary Sanchez is a mystery sometimes, Steve. He's the most polarizing player on the Yankees. You talked about it. The talent is there. I mean, this is a guy who's got a couple of 30-plus homer seasons on his resume. I go back to 2016 when he broke in. I mean, people forget he had 20 home runs and 50-something games. He had an OPS of over 1,000. He finished second in the Rookie of the Year balloting. And sometimes you watch him play and you do say to yourself, where has that player gone? Because this has now been a prolonged period of offensive ineptitude for him. I mean, let's be honest about it. He's hitting under 200 right now, too many strikeouts. And what is puzzling to me, Steve, is that he gets beat on fastballs. And that was a problem last year. Right. That's been a problem this year. And when batters struggle with off-speed stuff or breaking pitches, you kind of understand it. But when you can't square up a fastball, when you get a middle pitch and you can't do some damage on it, and you're a guy who's had the power numbers that he has had, that's been the part of this that has been the most puzzling to me.
You know, you allude to those batting averages that are under 200, and I'm sure you're aware of some of the numbers have been for Major League Baseball, generally speaking, where collectively, I mean, offenses with all Major League Baseball teams are about a 236 with batting averages. So it's like you're describing not just a couple of Yankees hitting under 200. You're also describing Major League Baseball with just about everybody hitting under 200.
Steve, we have a great statistical research group at YES, mm-hmm. and we see those numbers all the time. And for some reason, and as I was talking to you now, I just looked it up, so okay. I am confirming my own information.
Okay.
For some reason, I knew that Bud Harrelson's lifetime average was 236. So every major league player is essentially Bud Harrelson right now. And that's not to pick on Bud Harrelson. He made a couple All-Star teams. He's got a World Series ring on his finger.
And he held up his own end of the bargain against Pete Rose.
Yes, he did. But he was a defense-first shortstop, but he had 236 in his career. And again, I just plucked him out of the air because I remembered that average. And right. That's what the average major league hitter is this year without the power, of course. Bud had no power. But I can't explain it. They changed the baseball. I'm going to steal David Cone's thoughts on this. David Cone just thinks that the pitchers are so far ahead of the hitters that with all of the information that the pitchers have and all of the pitching the ways that pitchers can improve, that hitters have kind of lagged behind. And Steve, you and I have both been baseball fans for a long time, and I can remember when I started covering baseball 30 years ago. If you had one guy on your staff who threw 95, you were in good shape. I think the Yankees have four guys that throw 100.
Right.
So it's just become such a game of pitching dominance and so many strikeouts.
And here's another thing about the pitchers and the balls that they're using. I mean, they're supposed to be more dense. They are supposed to be less home run, more warning track, and with the seams being a little bit more defined, and maybe that helps your spin rate. So you talk about the quality of the pitchers and everybody with the flamethrowers, and every team, it seems, does have guys who are throwing 98, 99, 100, whether they're locating that 80, the 99 or 100 where they want to may be another story. But you have seen, and we have seen, all of us have seen, awful at-bats with the breaking pitches, and maybe it is with the baseballs that they're using this year. You can only guess and speculate, you know, as everybody tries to figure out why everybody is Bud Harrelson with the batting average, and runs are down, and offenses are down, and pitching is up, and we could talk about the strike zone. We could talk about the pitcher's mound, and maybe something with the baseballs themselves, with the seams being a little bit more defined and able to do what you want to do, especially if you're throwing some kind of a breaking pitch.
Yeah, I think everything that you just said applies. I think there are batters themselves who are probably trying to figure all of this out. I see a lot of frustrated hitters. I know Brett Gardner talked about this a couple of weeks ago, how he and Frazier had a conversation about how they weren't pulling their weight, and with Stanton down, not that they would ever duplicate Stanton, but they had to come through. And
right,
it has trended up a little bit. I do think it was 232 in April, and I think the month of May, it's 242. So maybe okay, the offense will climb a little more going forward. I do think we all love to see wonderfully pitched games, but I do like to see competitive at-bats too. And sometimes this year, I've covered enough games where the at-bats were not competitive at all.
Oh, no, just awful. And what do you think of the shift? Would the elimination of what some consider to be an illegal defense, do you think eliminating the shift would help with offense?
I think it would, Steve, and I think baseball seems to be trending that way. I don't think that they're auditioning all of these potential rules in the minor leagues just for the sake of auditioning them. I think these are ways that they might change the game. Honestly, I don't love the idea of outlawing the shift. I think I've had numerous conversations with Paul O'Neill. Now, granted, he hit the ball to all fields, but I do think that the hitter needs to adjust. If a football team knew that your two best wide receivers were on the left side of the field, mm-hmm, and they put five defensive backs on the left side of the field, it's up to you to go to the right side of the field with your offense.
Sure.
That's the way I feel about shifts. If that's what the team is doing to you defensively, you need to figure out a way to counter offensively.
Do the Yankees, I'm going to ask you at this point, now obviously if I were to ask you in September, are the Yankees a championship caliber team, we'd have a better idea how to go about, you know, speculating and guessing, because we know it's a crapshoot once you get into the postseason, into serious October baseball. So anything can happen and does. But let me ask you at this point, at the quarter poll, we're about so much, give or take, 25% of the season into 2021. Where could the Yankees improve, where you might feel better about calling them a potential a championship-caliber team?
Well, Steve, I think when you look in the outfield and what we just talked about, I mentioned Gardner, I mentioned Frazier. Hicks is down. I think they need some depth in the outfield. Brett Gardner has had a wonderful Yankee career, but the Yankees themselves, when they signed him this year, they told him it was to be a fourth outfielder, a backup outfielder. So I think adding some outfield help would be something that they could definitely use and something that could help them along the way. And then in terms of being championship caliber, I mean, this is the perfect day to talk about this. You have to stay healthy. And on the day where they're looking at Kluber being down for 2 months and Voigt's oblique strain might be just as long. Judge had an oblique strain in 2019 and he missed 2 months. You have to stay healthy, and the Yankees need to make sure that they do that if they want to get to their ultimate goal.
And the Yankees, they don't really, I mean, they're so right-handed, this we know. And by the way, that brings me to Steven Matz last night. Facing a predominantly right-handed batting Yankee team, was able to really go into the seventh inning, and all of his breaking pitches were on the money, and the Yankees were swinging through them or over them or under them. And what was, to you, the secret for Steven Matz last night, recording 6 1/3 and striking out 10 Yankees, not even walking anyone, a Steven Matz that no Metropolitan fan can remember?
Yeah, he had a formula that worked, and the formula was a lot of sinkers and cutters into the righties and a lot of change-ups away. And he also had his adrenaline pumping, Steve. I mentioned our stat crew to you earlier. His velocity on all of his pitches was up 2 miles an hour last night. So everything he threw, and if the Yankees had a scouting report that said his fastball was going to be 94, it was 96 or 97. Yeah. And even his slider, which averaged 88, was at 90. So he actually came out and attacked them and was aggressive, and he dictated the pace of that game. He shut down their offense. There were a lot of vacant at-bats from the Yankees last night.
And he was terrific, and I know that family was there, and no doubt some friends as well from growing up in the area. So certainly, and a lot of Met fans were calling last night, Jack, and why did the Mets let him go, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the change of scenery and a different uniform and a different opportunity, he's made the most of it. And a lot of us who certainly from a professional point of view knew him a little bit and watched him from the very beginning of his pro career with the Mets.
No doubt about it. And
yeah,
as you said, sometimes a change of scenery is what helps a pitcher. And his stuff was good last night. That's a winning formula. Now, I'm not sure if he can do that every time he's out there, but what he did against the Yankees last night, that will work for the Blue Jays.
Yes, and so far has been. Jack, we'll let you go. I can't thank you enough. I know we wish both of us and a lot of others too wish we had some games tonight, but the doubleheader tomorrow with the Yankees and the Jays, and we look forward to seeing you and your cohorts on the YES Network, not only before, but during and after the games as well. Thanks so much for a couple of minutes here, Jack.
Always a pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Jack Curry of the YES Network.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.